Hello, I'm Radek.
I'm Michael.
And this is The Podcast,
a sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you,
as well as technology and productivity, which is what we do every day working on our app, Nozbe.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
Okay, so before we start, I wanted to give a shout out to a thing we've added on the podcast website, which is the table of contents.
Yay!
So this is cool. Well, I'm biased. I made this, so but it's cool. Trust me. When you go to thepodcast.fm/TOC, as in table of contents,
or just choose table of contents from the menu on our website.
Yeah, you could do that too. Then you'll see the list of all episodes grouped by topic. So it's cool if you're just starting out and you're a new listener, because you can see like everything, all of our past topics there, but they're not chronological. Instead, you know, you can pick and choose depending on what you're interested in.
Yeah, especially that we discuss different topics, really different books. So actually, you know, if you you want to just choose a certain thing you want to discuss, you want to listen to us discussing and, you know, giving you value in that. So just choose it.
Yeah, and you can engage with our brand.
That's right. Or with us. Mm-hmm. And while you're at it, you know, you can just, you know, browse the table of contents website, which is amazing. And you can also go to iTunes and rate us on iTunes. Yay!
Oh, that would
be cool.
So
many 5-star reviews, then, you know, thank you. I actually don't know if we have 5-star reviews, but I don't want to check.
Ouch.
Okay. So today we are talking about yet another book, right?
That's right.
So, The Matrix.
No.
I'm sorry. The book is
we having Martin for the third time mixing in this fragment?
Yes.
There is no spoon.
Then you'll see that it is not the spoon that bends. It is only yourself.
You hear that, Mr. Anderson? That is the sound of inevitability.
So, Inevitable, the book about trends and about what's going to be inevitable in the future. And this is the book that you read first and recommended that I read as well to discuss it.
That's right. So I you're more fresh with the book, so you should start. What did you think of it?
So first of all, the thing is, you know, the guy doesn't have all the answers. It's not like he has this, you know...
Of course not.
...thing that... crystal ball, and he just knows what's going to happen. I mean, lots of the things he discusses are pretty obvious if you're, you know, not living under a rock or something. But for me, the beginning was very good. The later he was just repeating too much of the same concepts. But in whole, there are things I agree in this book. There are things I'm not sure about. But basically, you know, going through this, I would say he does outline a future that I see coming up.
Yeah, a lot of the things, like, especially when you kind of outline it, are obvious, or, you know, well, perhaps not everything, but it doesn't seem particularly insightful. But he did clearly think a lot about it. And he doesn't have all the answers. I don't agree with everything. There's things I think he missed that are important. But overall, I think it's a pretty good perspective. And he did point out some interesting trends or remind me of them. So it was a pretty good read.
Yeah, what I really liked in the very beginning was the force of becoming. You know, what. Things are becoming what, you know, like if you see a car, you know, a car used to be a horse, now it's a car, right? And now it's becoming something even more, like with either Uber and, you know, these kind of developments, like shared rides, or, you know, Tesla and all these developments. So so the car is becoming something totally, I mean, not totally different, but something a lot different and a lot, you know, more interesting as well. and of course the internet. And what I really liked also that what he mentioned and what I really believe is true is that on one hand, we who, you know, I mean, I've been running Nozbe for 10 years now. So I can say that, you know, that it was then better time to start a like task management, project management app because mm-hmm. there were not so many. So I had fewer competition in theory. On the other hand, with all the developments, all these things that how internet is becoming, how the programming is becoming easier and more accessible to people, how all these services are becoming more accessible to people, and you can actually, like Lego blocks, you can just take lots of services, glue them together with APIs, and actually build a product out of it. Mm-hmm. So I agree that, you know, in 2016, we think everything has been invented, but actually, it's not. You know, we are still at the very beginning of things. I mean, it's still becoming a lot more. So, and that's why when people ask me, you know, after 10 years of running Nozbe, you must be bored to death, and you like you just you know, you've already discovered and set up a product. I mean, you know, you're set for life. And I'm like, not really.
No.
The more I see what we can do, the more I see, the more opportunities I see. I mean, the more time passes, the more things I see we can still do, and we can still, you know, how we can still improve. So I don't see, you know, us celebrating 10 years of Nozbe and thinking, yeah, we're done. Because we're definitely not.
Yeah. I really like how on the podcast Exponent, Ben Thompson and James Allworth, they talk a lot about companies injecting technology in new places. So I like how they talked about, you know, in the past, for the last two decades, technology was its own kind of thing, its own industry, and we competed with each other, right? So we're in this like tech, we're doing an app, right?
Right.
But the thing is, technology is not now its own thing. Technology is everywhere, and everything that's not yet been touched with technology or the new technology, you know, with internet, or with, you know, more smart or artificial intelligence, or, you know, these kinds of things, it will be. So it's still, you know, it's still the best time ever to start. It's still a good time to start making, I don't know, a new task management app. But there's plenty of these other opportunities that would be too difficult in the past. Like when you see Uber, like, you know, it's a cliche example because everyone talks about Uber, but it's a transportation company and a technology company, right? They injected technology, and now transportation is becoming something else. Or Airbnb, another obvious example, right? They're in the technology business and hospitality business, right? It's like they're into hotels, but not really. But they've injected technology into something that previously lacked technology, and now it became something else.
In a month, I'm going for a vacation with my family, and I just yesterday I booked two places where we're going to stay, both on Airbnb. So yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and there's this quote by Mark Andreessen, whom I don't really like, but anyway, he said that software is eating the world, and this is something. This, as you said, you inject technology into things, and they just become better. Mm-hmm. And even in this book, the author went one step further. He said that, you know, if you inject AI, so artificial intelligence, into anything, you know, into any object, it becomes 10 times better because mm-hmm. you know, of the AI. And I don't necessarily think that everything will be 10 times better because it's going to be just a little bit smarter. But you're right. I mean, he's right in the whole that if you make something smarter, it's just going to be really more useful and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as computing becomes cheaper and cheaper, eventually it becomes like so cheap and so ubiquitous that it's no longer a big decision to make. It's just like you can have a chip everywhere because why not, right?
Yeah.
So you can have, like, he talked about things which now seem totally ridiculous, like smart clothes and smart washing machines.
Yeah.
But at one point, perhaps it won't be so strange because it will be just so easy and cheap and ubiquitous that there will be no reason not to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's already like this, that, you know, that I still remember, you know, I still remember the times when we had, you know, floppy disks, and then we had pen drives. And when we had the first pen drives, they were very expensive. Mm-hmm. And now they give you a pen drive everywhere, you know, for free. I'm like, I have a few of them, and I'm just throwing them away because I don't need them anymore. I mean, who uses pen drives? We have Dropbox. But still, you know, it's amazing how something that was really expensive, you know, at some point became so cheap so quickly. And it's the same with that data storage. Like when I started Nosby, I had to really figure out, you know, how much data I can store for every user, how many attachments, there was like limits to how many attachments people could, you know, attach to projects. And then now it's just so cheap that I just, you know, don't care anymore because yeah, like,
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. One observation, which is not new to me, but it was interesting. The first time I heard it is just what we think of as AI. Like the thing is, every time something becomes possible with computers, it's no longer AI. It's just a thing we do with computers. It's normal,
exactly.
Right? And AI is always this futuristic, you know, almost usually dystopian thing. You know, it's like robots which are like humans, and it's not a very useful way to think about it. So AI is always something that's not there, and every time something becomes possible, it just becomes normal. We accept it as a fact, and we put a different name to it, right? So we just have, you know, normal algorithms. We have machine learning or whatever. Or Bayesian filters. Or it's no longer artificial intelligence. Like we no longer think, oh, it's something, you know, it's something humans are uniquely equipped to do, and we'd have to have artificial intelligence to do it. It's just with time, as we figure out more and more advanced way to process information, and, you know, pick up patterns and things like that, it just becomes normal.
Yeah, I remember I had a conversation with somebody about productivity. They asked me about Nosby and about things and about how an app cannot, you know, still decide for you, right, what to do. And I was thinking, you know, if you think about it, if my Nosby app runs on my iPhone and my iPhone knows where I am, what time it is, has studied my patterns of how I work, and knows what's the temperature outside, knows, you know, like, no, knows, I mean, has all these sensors. And for example, and I have my Apple Watch, it knows my, I don't know, my health at this moment, and has my priority list in front of me. Actually, Nosby would, in theory, be able to suggest me, you know, Michael, you should be working on this right now, right? It sounds a little bit ridiculous if you think about it, but on the other hand, with so many sensors, and in the book there, I mean, he also teaches about things that people put sensors on everything as well. Mm-hmm. With so many sensors and so many information we already have, and our, you know, our phones and our smartphones and our computers have about us, we can really, you know, be smart about it. And again, we don't call it AI; we just call it, you know, it's just suggesting. It's just you know, suggestion mechanism. Yeah. That's it.
Well, I'm still slightly skeptical about how much could we really do useful with it. At least now, it still seems rather ridiculous to me. And yet, it's, I guess what's important is just not to reject it out of hand completely, because even if it will never be perfect, or you know, never in quotes at least, you know, never in the near future, or won't be perfect, or whatever, even if it can do it now, it doesn't mean there aren't opportunities there, perhaps I think in the future with, you know, with enough data and enough sensors, enough like inputs to be able to figure things out, or at least suggest things. So yeah, it's really something to think about in the future.
Yeah, and in the, this I mean, very, very good point. And this reminds me actually of also in the book, this fantastic loop of you know, robot, rejection of robots, and, you know, denial of robots. So first of all, you know, I have a job and I'm the best to do the job, and then they come the robots. So like, the first step is, you know, there's no way this robot can do my job, you know, and then there's like, you keep going, you know, okay, this robot actually is doing my job, but not so good as I can. Mm-hmm. But then, actually it's doing actually pretty good job. Actually, it's faster than me, actually. Actually, it's good that the robot is doing my job because then I have another job now. And then the loop begins, you know, again. And these old phases like symbolize that. And which you said, it's our job to be open about it, to see these possibilities. Because, yes, Nosby, for example, will not be able to tell you which priority task you should be doing right now, right this moment, tomorrow. But slowly, Nosby will be smarter. Nosby will be able to suggest you more, to help you manage your stuff more and to get you more organized. But and with these baby steps, just like with these robots, you come to a situation where things, as you said, are just obvious. It just works like this, right? You know, and this is the what's amazing about technology right now.
Yeah. So I don't think we'll able to convey it as persuasively as the author did, but like he made a very interesting point that in a way machines help us become more human by taking over routine work that doesn't really matter. Right, so let them. And again, it's difficult to summarize like just how he like came to a conclusion, but you know, just forgetting for a moment the obviously important questions of, you know, how it comes to be, like how society changes to keep up with the changing technology, which is obviously a problem already right now and will be in the future. In a way, it makes a lot of sense that, you know, right now people, humans, do a lot of things which can be automated. And if you automate them in the long term, that means you're freed up to do something more important, more, you know, harder, like something that machines couldn't do, you know, make decisions that machines couldn't do, at least not yet, right? And through this, it's kind of bringing you closer to what is uniquely human. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and a couple of things here. So first of all, we're just hiring a new software tester, like quality assurance specialist in Nosby. And I just we just hired one, and I was interviewing him. My interview is the last one in the process, and we were talking about automatic tests, because there are opinions about automatic tests, how many things can be automated, which can't, and all
and
these
how.
Things, you know. It just, I don't want to get into this discussion here, but we all agree that some things really can be automated and just made really automatic. And I told him, you know, you should be looking at this. You should be looking where you can automate things, because I believe you're hired for something more than just copy and paste, you know? Right. I mean, the computer can do copy and paste faster than you, so let them do it, right? So I told him that, you know, we cannot automate all the tests, but we can automate a lot of them. So this way he will not have to go through everything all over again when we release a new version of application. Mm-hmm. So things like that. And what you said about the you know, these computers being faster and better than us, it reminds me also of the movie Her. Have you seen the movie?
Of course.
Okay, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Her and you want to see it, you know, just stop listening right now. So, Her with Invisible Scarlett Johansson. So the movie was amazing in this way. I mean, for me, it was a shocker when the person, I mean, who was actually falling in love with, you know, with Siri, she had... I mean, he thought he had a genuine relationship with her. So with this assistant, computer assistant. Mm-hmm. While she was a computer, so she had unlimited computing power. So actually she had almost unlimited these kind of relationships. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, it's crazy. But this is something what this book actually highlights, is that there are things that the computers can do, which we will never be able to do. We will never be able, as humans, like have, like, you know, 8,000 romantic relationships at the same time, you know, or you know.
Yeah, I don't think that's actually very relevant to the discussion, except for the fact that, like people tend to think of you know, automation, you know, when we think of like computers, machines, AI, we think of automation, right? So things computers can do better or cheaper. But a much more interesting is things humans can't do at all. Like you could not possibly replace Google with a human. You could not possibly. There's just no way.
I mean, you know, there was a good example in the book, you know, that if you think about it, you know, Google is doing a search query in milliseconds or micro something nanoseconds that a person would spend, I don't know how many days doing this research for this one query, right? So that's really impossible. Yeah. No, that's why. But what I'm saying is that sometimes for us, because we are limited by thinking how computers work, that they can speed up our work a little bit, we don't see this whole realm of things that computers can just do that we just can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another interesting observation is that, you know, the highest paying jobs of 2050 will depend on technologies not yet invented.
Yes.
Yeah, like think about it. Like, a big chunk of jobs done today, or rather, a big chunk of people do jobs that in one way or another existed some time ago. But when you count like individual kinds of jobs, like 70% of jobs didn't exist 200 years ago, right? And especially with technology progressing faster and faster, there's things we cannot predict just yet because we, like, it depends on, you know, it's a few steps removed from where we are now. Like, we first need X to be able to invent technology Y, but because like X hasn't yet been invented, we can't even see that. And without that, like, we can't even see the kinds of, you know, new and hot jobs the great new generation of 2050 or 2100 will do.
Yeah, and if you think about, you know, in just like in a few years, I mean, what happened with like with the smartphone? You know, today actually is the is an anniversary of Steve Jobs passing, and
true.
Actually, if you think about it, you know, he when he showed the iPhone, it was many people thought it was just a better phone, while it was just a pocket computer.
Except it wasn't better at all. It was worse in so many ways.
It was a worse phone, but it was a first pocket computer that really was a pocket computer. And now the latest and the greatest iPhone 7 is actually faster than the current lineup of MacBook Airs, as far as I remember. So like in this, you know, in this whole, you know, 10, not even 10 year time span from something, you know, from first pocket computer to a pocket computer that's actually as fast as a desktop computer, and the same with you know, cell phones. Like 20 years ago we had a cell phone, yay, we could talk, you know, and now they're just dumb pipes, right? I mean, and nobody cares about their, you know, voice calling business anymore, right? So and this is 20 years. So
yeah,
it's just freaking amazing how this thing changes. And as you said, you know, in 2050, it's going to be just totally different.
Like, there's so many things, like just 20 years ago, not even that long ago, 20 years ago, that people just did not see what we have now. If you explain it to them, you know, technical people could grasp it, but people haven't really predicted today. So like, try predicting 2015 or 2100. I'm sure there's bits and pieces that could be explained, and we'd understand them, and we think that's interesting, though we wouldn't like clearly see it not having experienced it. But we can't see exactly which have. Goes so that's interesting.
Another concept that I really think also is like very similar, but still, like, it's this whole thing that, you know, we just mentioned, for example, Airbnb, like, and Uber, actually. So convenience and access versus actually having, so versus ownership. Mm-hmm. Right, so like in many big cities right now where Uber is ubiquitous, people just don't buy cars, they just travel by Uber and that's it, and it's cheaper for them than owning a car. I was just we discussed this on the past show, I don't remember which one, but we discussed this, that
yeah, it was early on,
Yeah, when I'm going to my hometown, I was thinking actually of getting a car there, of buying a car to have it there, right? But then I thought it's a stupid idea, and so every time we'll go there, we just rent a car because we just don't need to have a car there because we come there, you know, twice a year, you know. So at best, so we just rent a car every time. So we just pay for the convenience of having a car waiting for us. It's a new car every time, you know. It's just there. We just take it. We rent it. And it's going to be cheaper for us than owning a car, you know, deteriorating in value and all these things. So now when I look at, you know, more things that I use and more things that I care about, it's, and you know, that's why the subscription model that we have in Nozbe or any other subscription model makes total sense, because people pay for the convenience of having something when they need it, and not of owning something and needing to take care of it.
In some ways, it's also obvious because we it really became a thing that people do. But when you think about it, it's quite remarkable, this shift away from ownership to accessing. And it doesn't make sense to everything. Though the book made quite an interesting scenario of it being totally possible to just live without owning anything and still have access to lots of stuff. But anyway, your example of a car, perhaps it's not the best one because you're only there like some of the time. So it seems obvious to me that owning a car there would be a ridiculously stupid idea.
Oh, yeah.
But think about, you know, the possibility of you not owning a car at all and still taking advantage of cars. Because like, how stupid is it to own a car where it's like, even when you use it regularly, it still sits unused, idle, like 98 or 95% of the time.
Oh yes.
It's unused. Like that's a stupid idea. And for various reasons, it mostly makes sense, though it makes sense less and less. But you know, when you combine autonomous driving, which is again AI, plus electric cars where the energy is cheap and like other advancements, it will be, you know, maybe not insane, but it just won't make sense to many people to own cars, because why would you do that? It's like so expensive and inefficient, and it's so constraining for you to own a car. Like, why own a car when you can get access to a car within 1 minute, right? And just have it take you anywhere you want and then stop using that car. It makes so much sense to use this car this way. It's going to take some time, but we'll get there.
Yeah, and as you said, with lots of things, we'll start not really owning things, you know, and just using them, having access to them, and that's it. And this seems, you know, strange. Also with the cars, for example, the car it still is sometimes a status symbol, right? Somebody has a nice car or whatever, but things are changing right now, and it stops becoming that. So when it does, this will no longer be relevant. So there will be the psychological shift as well. Mm-hmm. And because this is also required, you know, when we make these shifts, I think, you know, I think it's, when you think about it, you know, what you just said about 2050 and 2100. So if you think about it, just, I don't know if we are, you know, psychologically prepared for such rapid development, growth and change, you know, it's just so fast, right? Like lots of people still in 2016, don't have a smartphone or a computer because they're afraid of it, right? Something we just take for granted. But
I don't think fear is what it is, but okay.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the change that we are going through, it's going to be faster, you know. Mm-hmm. And we as humans also, we have to be ready for this, you know, to be ready to embrace it.
The author actually talked about it at the very beginning, with becoming. We'll become mm-hmm. perpetual newbies because everything changes so fast. I think it might be difficult, especially at the start, for like older generations to adapt. But with time, you know, with like now, with the generation that's growing up now, they will always be used to the fact that things change rapidly. So
yeah.
you will learn from the very start that it's that you always learn, that you're all, that things are always changing. And it won't be like you learned things once and then you go about your life, but you'll be perpetual newbies and it will be fine, I think.
Yeah, and everything will always be upgrading to the latest model. And it's like a lot of software products, including ours, you know, they update automatically. You know, when you have an OSBI on your smartphone, on your iPhone, it's just, you know, you get new version whenever there's a new version there, and it just changes. And you better watch out because things are changing.
Yeah, and the thing to say here, and obviously we're skipping lots of details because there's so much in the book and so little time to unpack it, so we're skimming through it. But a lot of things are better than owning. Sometimes it's part of it is economical. Like right now, it makes sense for a lot of people to own cars, but it won't make sense to own cars because it will be cheaper not to own cars. But it's like a perfect like old example of something that's better than owning roads. Like it's like it would be insane for people to own their individual roads and have to like have systems of roads that are incompatible with each other. Like it's ridiculous. It makes way more sense to just share it, pay for it like a subscription with this thing called tax, and just use it whenever you want or not use it. It's fine, whatever. And with other things, a subscription model allows interesting new things. So, for example, with music, like something we're already a lot of people used to, not owning music, but just accessing music through your Spotify or Apple Music, is that you can access lots of things that you would never have, because it would not make sense to buy this song or album that you're not sure you're going to like. But when you just can access whatever you want, you can try something, and sometimes you'll add it to your album and listen to it a lot, but you can access to way more things. Or imagine books. Not sure if it's going to happen or what way specifically, but imagine if you could subscribe to your Amazon / Audible, like to access to like all the library of all books ever, right? If you had this hyperlink, this book of the future, which we discussed a bunch of episodes ago, where you have like references to other books or quotes that link exactly to other books. Again, you could access this whole web of knowledge, right? Because like it wouldn't make sense to buy a book just to see if there's something interesting there. But when you can just, you know, jump between links and find these bits and pieces in all sorts of books, again, that's something not possible without a subscription to just all books.
No, and exactly, something we discussed a few episodes ago about a better audiobook or a better book. Mm-hmm. It's just, there was a very good, you know, a few paragraphs there about this in this book, about how a hyperlinked book could look like, you know, and could work. And along with everything, with links to the exact quotes, with customer, you know, highlights, with, you know, everything. And this would be, again, create an amazing, you know, not well of knowledge, as you said. It's, yeah, really cool.
That's right.
You know, also the concept of data. So something, it's mind-boggling for me a little bit, you know, that we are collecting lots of data right now because data is cheap. You can store them on infinite hard disks right now. So there is lots of storage, so we store everything, and we store everything. Google knows everything about us, actually, when you think about it. So we store this. And the problem that I see, like practical problem for me right now, is the fact that really I can take as many pictures as I like. So it's great. But on the other hand, this causes a problem that I never review the pictures anymore. And for me to find a picture now, it's really getting difficult because and I don't have really time to remove the pictures I didn't like and all these things. So to do the curation of my album, you know, when you only could take 36 pictures and you would, you know, reveal them and, you know, you would, and you would put them in the album and some of them you would throw away. Yeah. But now with so many pictures, especially when you have, you know, just like me, you have three kids, then it's, you take lots of pictures. So for me, for example, all these services and all these functions, which enable kind of AI to actually go through this immense data of my pictures and find me a nice album, create me automatically an album or a slideshow or something, or choose the best pictures for me, you know, this mm-hmm. would be very valuable, because we're coming to a point where we collect lots of data, but then we just, you know, the data is there, but, you know, it's hard for us to do something with the data. What the author is arguing is that data cannot just sit idle. Data has to be manipulated, has to be linked, has to be used and for some better purpose. And for me, this is really important that, you know, that in this practical case of the photos, that I want to take lots of pictures, but then I want to see only the best, and I want to see them in a way that makes sense. And that's why these things should be better.
And also filter the data. What the author, I think what he said was, in the world of abundance, there's too much for you to ever consume.
Yes.
Right? We have this wealth of information, but that kind of creates a poverty of attention, right? We can't, there's so much, we need filters. We need help from technology to solve another problem created by technology, which is we need ways to just find stuff. But that's interesting, because if you do it right, you can really get access to lots of things. So like, for example, what in another part of the book, when the author talked about flowing, so the concept that, you know, information, you know, data is free and can flow everything and is therefore is free, right? There's things better than free, and one of those things is findability, right? Like, a thing is worthless if you can't find it. And so an interesting thing about something like Netflix is recommendations, right? You got to pay for Netflix, but, you know, that might not happen now because Netflix's libraries is limited. But in principle, like, imagine all movies or TV shows there, but they're worthless if you can't find them, if you can't find something you'd like. Or the same thing with books, right? And as a subscription giving access to all the books would be valuable and worth paying for if it had like really powerful filters and ways of searching things and really, really good recommendations, which Amazon is already pretty good at, but will get way, way better with better technology, right? And it can suggest things to you that are interesting to you and that you would never otherwise find. That's interesting.
Yes, it is, although Netflix recommendation engine, I don't know, people praise it, but I just hate it. I think it's still rubbish. It's
well, but we're talking about the future, man.
Yeah, I think so, because really I'm using Netflix every day and it keeps recommending me things I have already seen and mm-hmm. I've seen them using this Netflix account, so it should know better, right? So why would it recommend me something again? So yeah, I don't know, Netflix recommendation engine is still things to work on. But anyway, you're totally right. I mean, for me it was already kind of magical. I remember when this shady company LinkedIn, I have a profile there, so I was just updating my profile in LinkedIn, and it would just tell me, you know, you might know these people. And I'm like, whoa, I actually know them. You know, it shouldn't be a shocker actually, because, you know, it's pretty easy algorithm if you think about it. But for me, I remember this moment where I just saw it first time, this recommendation engine from LinkedIn. I was like, how do they know that? I already know these people. You know, I was genuinely surprised that, you know, people who they recommended as my, you know, connections are actually people I know. You know, and this was a little bit strange, but on the other hand, you know, I know how it works. So, but I remember this moment where I was just surprised.
Yeah. All right. Another thing I wanted to mention is get back to the concept of flowing. So again, the author talked about how, you know, when the Industrial Revolution made copying exact and cheap, the Information Revolution made copying exact and free, right? So information can flow everywhere. It wants to flow everywhere. And that can be a problem because it still takes effort and money and work to make, and it's like fundamentally free in a way, because the incremental cost of making a copy is zero, and so I like the list of things which can be copied, things that are better than free, things which are still worth paying for. I have the list on my in my book notes on my site if you want to find them. But it's like this: immediacy. So like you could probably find it on, you know, BitTorrent or whatever, but you can get it now when you pay for it. Tailoring. So, you know, get something that's customized to me. You can get an exact copy for free in some way, but if you can get something that's made just for you, that's worth paying for. Understanding. So that's an example would be Red Hat, which is a company that sells Linux distributions. And their product is free, but the real product, what makes the company work, is they provide customer service. They provide kind of a manual, right? They made this work for you, and that's valuable. Authenticity, you know, pay for it because you know it's the real thing and not a fake, not a scam, not malware, not, you know it's authentic. Convenience, pay for it because it's easier, because it's more convenient. Than finding an illegal copy for free. Patronage, pay for it because you want to support the offer. We see a lot of that in music already. Music is, in a way, worthless, unfortunately. Like the streaming services, even if you pay for it, it's worth, you know, a song being played is worth fractions of a penny. And a lot, if not most, of tiny music offers which are not well known, they tend to have their music on like Bandcamp or SoundCloud, where you can download it for free, and they encourage you to do that, but they still want, like, encourage you that if you want to pay for it, you can. And sometimes people do want to pay for it because you want to support your offer. Embodiment. So get a physical copy of a book because it's an embodied book. It's not just a thing you have in the device. You have it on your shelf, and that's valuable. Or a live concert, right? That's better than free. That can't be copied. And again, findability. So pay for it because it could be found.
No, it's so true. I mean, especially these examples of something to have. I mean, you want things right away, right now. So if you want something right now, mm-hmm. you're actually going to pay for it because you want it right now. Because just a thought of, you know, I will have to go there to get this, and then you stand in line and like, no, I want it right now. So like for me, this was always, I mean, as an iTunes user, was always like when I wanted to get a new disc, I stopped buying discs altogether. I was just browsing, you know, we talked about, you know, Spotify and things, but you know, in the times where iTunes came up, I stopped buying discs because I just was going through MediaMarkt, you know, and there were discs, and I was like, oh, I want this album. And I would just get it right now on my iPhone through iTunes because it would be just right there. I don't have to buy the disc, go home, rip it to iTunes to import it to my iTunes, and you know, all these things. I actually would pay for mm-hmm. having it immediately. But on the other hand, things like experiences, like as you said, personalized things are things that are mm-hmm. special for us. So the special things we pay for. And that's why, for example, also Airbnb is so successful, because actually very often where you rent a house on Airbnb, that people try to give you this experience. You know, they want to give you something special, like you, like you feel like you are in their home and you are like a local person in the city and not a visitor on a hotel. And right now, I think the whole thing of Kickstarter, where people build things and then they ship them, you know, they ship books suddenly again, right? Or things that are special, you know, limited editions, make so much sense because people, you know, want appreciate this, you know, individual special thing, and they can pay for it.
Okay, we're running out of time. I think we have more interesting ideas in the book to discuss, like, you know, questioning and tracking, and yeah, there's things we really have to discuss. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably get back to it next week. So
all right.
See you then.